So, hello, Steve, and welcome to the Art of VFX podcast. I'm here with Steve Brigg, animation supervisor for Digital Domain on Joseph Kosinski's Oblivion. So, Steve, but before we talk about Oblivion, usually we do this, your path bringing you to be an animation super on Oblivion, for anybody. Even the youngsters. Did you start with a degree in philosophy, like some person I know, and then switch to CG, or how did it happen for you? Tell us briefly.
Actually, I started my degree is in mechanical engineering.
Cool.
And when I was at Santa Barbara, at UC Santa Barbara, a friend of mine was working down. He was in the film school there, and he was working down here with Lightstorm Entertainment back then. And he needed some help on some technical issues on a project and kind of sucked me into the. I'd been doing a lot of CG stuff in for engineering related stuff like CAD and things like that. So I was familiar with back then 3D Studio and R1, and that kind of sucked me into the whole film world, much to my father's dismay. But he's okay with it now.
He's okay with it now? Good. Wow, that's
Yeah,
so
he's.
interesting to see where all the people come from various backgrounds. So, Digital Domain landed half the work, I'm told, and Pixomondo the other. About 400 shots, correct?
Yeah, I think 370 was the number that we ended up doing, but close to 400, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
And so
picks about the same, yeah.
we won't talk about all of them, but you guys did the Tet in the sky, I think, the Tet close up inside of it as well, the drones, the resource gatherers, the library sequence, the Odyssey crash of the last humans, some face replacements, and the Raven's attack. We will come back to all of these in a little, but any word on the collaboration with Joe Kosinski, with his design-centric aesthetic, that
I
and in
mean,
relation to animation and to you, was he as meticulous about how things move and act and to how they look?
oh
How was it?
yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd worked with Joe already on Tron for a couple of years, and so in that show we did pretty much everything, and so there had been a lot of conversations and work with him on how he likes things to move, and he is just as particular about. Actually, everything about the movie. I mean, not only the design sense, but like he's super, keen on the music and how that's all going to work, the sound. I mean, he goes and mixes that stuff. It is all done in Atmos and movement, camera work. I mean, he's super particular about camera work, all that stuff. So I don't think there's any aspect of his films that he's not particularly sensitive to.
Wow, yes, exactly. The camera work as well. I had mostly questions about as an anime soup. Was it all previs solid and done, or did you have your say about the choreo, the pacing of the camera path, or and all this? Because it seems to be an important part of this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was previs. Some of it wasn't. Certain things the previs came through quite well, and then it was a matter of sort of tweaking it or tuning it. Other things, just because obviously between the time that previs is done and the time that you're actually finishing shots, the edit may have changed to a point where what was in previs doesn't quite work anymore. So, it definitely ranged from coming pretty well through previs to having to sort of make all new shots, and in that case, obviously for CG ones or even additional movement to plate photography, which is actually probably more common than most people think, is doing post-camera moves on things that have already been shot. So it's not just camera work in an all CG shot.
Yeah, exactly. You seem to have had both, right? You have the library sequence which was shot and you needed to extend or use what was shot, and another sequence at the end where it's mostly CG. So two examples.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the library was almost all live action sets, with just some extensions in the ceiling and sides, and then the little crevasse that he walks over was, of course, not really there. Most of that camera work was pretty much the same. But yeah, there was the gamut of everything from just adding little bits here and there to completely CG. There was, I guess, one fully CG shot, or another couple fully CG shots in the library. But then, of course, the TED is, you know, except the close-ups on Tom, everything is CG.
Yeah. And for you were talking about the sound. For the drone personality, you guys did the drones. I think in the final film, it seems very much the sound helps bring it all together, but we know you guys work without the sound at first. So tell us about a little bit how you instilled personality in these drones. How was
that? Yeah, I mean, you know, that was definitely sort of one of the bigger challenges from just a, you know, they're such a big part of the film and they have so little sort of articulation. They have the moving eye and then their guns move, and that's pretty much all that they have. And so trying to get, you know, some kind of, are they being threatening? Are they being, you know, are they docile at that point? And, you know, even how they move, like they're hovering, you know, you can't have them totally static, but you can't really have them bouncing around too much, or they just start looking like a bouncy ball. And so there was a lot of, you know, trying to get this feeling that they're like the Terminators. And I mean, they're determined, they're killing machines for the most part, but they do have to have a personality. And you're right about the sound. I mean, that was actually sort of a big shock to me when I actually went and saw the film, because I hadn't heard anything of what the drones were going to sound like. And it was pretty interesting that you know, the combination of subtle movement changes and the audio can definitely make the drones have a personality. I thought they did anyway.
Oh, I thought they did completely. I think it was tremendous. So, was it a given from Joe on how to do this for the drones, for example, or you were left free to find a way, for example, was completely like the white page blank and let's try to see how it works and repeat over and over some tests? How was it?
It was definitely a collab. I mean, everything with Joe is a collaboration. He's really good about giving you some starting points, or in some cases, you know, a completion point, and then, you know, it's your job to execute. In this particular case, he had mentioned he liked the look of, you know, these new quad and hex and octocopter things that are out and about now. Mm-hmm. He liked the idea and the way that those things move very stably, but yet, you know, kind of flew around. It's a bit different because, you know, those things obviously have an obvious way that they're levitating, you know, the propellers. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of, you know, our starting point. And then there was a lot of tests of, you know, just a drone moving back and forth, a drone opening its guns and firing it. How fast can a drone spin around? How fast can it, you know, can it accelerate or decelerate? And one of the first shots that we did with the drone...
Yeah, which one was the test shot, for example?
Well, the test shot in the stadium was where we kind of started. We didn't really even have a shot when we started testing some of the animation. But the first shot where it kind of, you know, we sort of had to go a number of different routes was the shot where the drone takes off right after he scans Tom and realizes that, you know, he's okay and he's sort of coming. And right when he takes off, you know, we've got sort of how fast can this thing take off? I mean, you know, we can't make it go too fast or it'll start to look, you know, fake, but we can't make it too slow or else it, you know, loses some of its kind of threatening, you know, the ability for it to travel around quickly. And so that was one where I kept holding back a little bit and Joe kept saying, faster, faster, make it take off faster. Like, we'll put the sound in there. It'll be great. So we kept having to speed it up. And then we give him ludicrous and then he says, okay, dial it back from there. So.
It just go too far and step back. Yeah. Wow.
Exactly.
But usually when we talk like this, it seems like, so how much time did you have to do it all? I mean, was it comfortable to be able to do this back and forth, or was it under a lot of time pressure? How was it on this show?
This one wasn't terrible. I think we had about 8 months of post, or at least I was on the show for 8 months. Mm-hmm. Eric was on a bit longer because he was involved in some of the earlier planning when he was on set. Mm-hmm. I think I was on it for about 8 months, and you know, that this particular show, it didn't really grow too much as far as our number of shots. It was all actually, you know, planned out really well, and we didn't get hit with, you know, 200 extra shots at the end, and so, you know, we bid it out as to those shots and that amount of time, and it came in, you know, pretty much just like that. I mean, it was pretty amazing to see Joe, you know, get the In fact, the total number of VFX shots, this is, I think, the first movie I've ever worked on where the original number of VFX shots actually was higher than what was actually done. It's almost always the other way around.
Yeah.
I think it was bid out at 1,000 and it came in about 800. So, yeah, it wasn't bad. We, you know.
Yeah. Looks good. Okay. And then, so the logistic aspect, maybe some with sharing it with Pixomondo, did you have a lot of shared assets or was it now split correctly that you didn't have too much trouble?
No, definitely. I mean, you know, we did a number of shots with the bubble ship and they did a number of drone shots as well. I mean, they're so, you know, they're in the movie so much of the time. Obviously inside the tent, you know, there's a bubble ship in there all the time. And there's a number of things that we did. Even mixing up like some of the stuff where they're flying around destroyed New York City, you know, two of those shots where they're flying up the sort of canyon of destroyed buildings were our two shots, which were just stuck in the middle of kind of their sequence. I mean, the benefit, or one of the benefits, was that, you know, they were using V-Ray and we were using V-Ray, so we had the same renderer. And they're right down on the street, so, you know, we could, you know, go have lunch with them and have them over and talk and show them stuff. The bummer part was that, you know, they were using 3D Studio Max and we were using Maya, so we couldn't quite just give them assets and have it work. Mm-hmm. But we basically did, you know, the look development, modeling and everything for the drone, and then passed them off that with turntables and HDRs and everything. And then they modeled and textured the bubble ship and then gave that to us. And, you know, there's a decent amount of work to still do because, you know, their texture space is different than ours and, you know, Z versus Y, you know, all that kind of stuff, scale, like all this. I think that we were a bit luckier in terms of taking the previs because we had conversations with the previs group very early on and had kind of shared some assets with them. So, you know, we knew that our scale, they were in Maya, our rig, you know, we gave them some basic rigs to work with, so we knew we could transfer a lot of their animation, at least as a starting point, very quickly, whereas I think that Pixomondo had a little more difficult time with it because they had to convert it into Max. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of sharing, and their supervisor, Bjorn, and our supervisor, Eric, you know, would go to each other's reviews, and so if there was something and that was in our shot that they had established to look for, let's say, you know, how the engines look on the bubble ship or something like that, then, you know, Bjorn would say, hey, you know, you sort of approved this look on our shot, and then we would just request either that that shot, that, you know, or their development or whatever, and just send stuff back and forth so that we could compare look, animation, you know, any of that stuff was communicated on almost every review. They would have someone from there here and vice versa.
So it was nice working with two VFX soups with no trouble that way, or was it bizarre?
No, I mean,
or like the code, you know, whatever.
Shows get split up all the time. It's, you know, so it. I mean, you know, for the most part, like Bjorn's interaction with us was just at the reviews where it was sort of like, you know, hey, this actually is something that they either want our version of at their shop because, you know, we've established something, or we need something. You know, he mentioned something they did. So, I mean, Bjorn was only here for, you know, an hour a week or so. And so we were working, you know, for Eric, basically. Yeah. And they, you know, Pixomondo was working for Bjorn. And so there was no studio side VFX. So, you know, that
was Joe.
That
was Joe.
Yeah. That was Joe.
That was Joe.
You know, in a lot of ways, you know, in that particular case, because the two effects houses are in LA and Joe's in LA, and they're only a, you know, 10-minute drive apart, that does in some ways allow Joe to do that a lot easier than cases where your VFX is split up all over the world and, you know, you do rely on somebody to wrangle all that stuff and you know, and keep it all consistent. So
exactly. And Steve, did you see the movie?
I've seen it a couple times actually.
Did you like it?
I thought it was a good movie. It was a fun ride, and actually, you know, I saw it just after Joe did his first cut. We saw it without any of the visual effects. I think Joe likes to do. He did the same thing to us with Tron. I think it's just to scare you into realizing how much work there is to do.
Yeah.
But in Oblivion's case, it was actually, I think, kind of the opposite, because we had just come off Tron, and Tron was terrifying to watch that, because it was just so much blue screen and previs that, you know, there was so much LCG. Whereas this one, you know, there was a lot, you know, a lot less shots, and we were only doing half of them, so... So we saw it then, and then I've seen it twice since it came out. So no, I think it's, you know, I think it's actually a really interesting movie to see a second time, because a lot of the reactions of the actors, you know, once you actually know sort of all the twists that happen in the end of the movie, and you go back and you watch their performances again, I think some of their performances make a lot of sense when you see it the second time.
Yeah, nice. No, exactly. I'm looking forward to the second time, actually. But so now looking at that, which shot are you the most happy with, Steve? Like, now from the point of view of where it started, maybe on that first review without the VFX, to where you guys were able to land it, is there one that you're kind of super happy, or maybe it went through a lot of iterations that makes it the one for you, for Digital Domain and for your team?
I mean, I think, you know, there's actually two shots that kind of go almost back to back in the movie, in the Raven's Rock attack. One is there's a big long fly through of the drone just kind of destroying the room. You know, that was originally previs to be very similar to that. And then during the shoot, it was decided that shot was going to be cut, and so we didn't need to end up surveying some of the stuff and you know, doing as much recon in the Raven's Rock area as we would have if we knew that we were going to do that fully CG shot. Mm-hmm. And then it came back. Ooh. And you know, the shoot was already done, and so we were kind of scrambling to figure out, like, you know, what do we have that we can work with, because we didn't really do as much survey in there as we would have if we knew that shot was coming. And then the shot, I think it's two shots after that, when that same drone comes down, the little, chute that it comes down just before he kills the guy in the turret. And that shot was very underexposed for the front half, and it's this really strange camera move that we had a really hard time tracking. And then after we got it all tracked, we looked at how the drone was moving and realized that we really needed to change the camera at the front of the shot, because it wasn't dropping fast enough, so we had to do some speed ramping in the live action plate to get the drone to kind of drop into frame the way we wanted it to. It's really hard to imagine, you know, when you're doing a big tilt down like that on set, like, you know, how fast is the drone going to be dropping down in, like, you know, and then you want the drone to overshoot camera a little bit and come back, and it's like they have no idea. They're, you know, there's nothing in the shot, so it's really something that you do need to control afterwards. But those two shots, I think, worked out really well together in the end. And the big fly through, you know, it's hard to see them all, but, you know, there's 30 or 40 guys running around getting killed. And you know, we threw that all on one animator, and I think he had a blast with it. You know, we were trying to even find, because again, we didn't plan on doing that shot. So the scavs were only scanned for shots where we were going to kill them, where they all had their armor and helmets on and everything. So we were digging up assets for, you know, the civilians that are in the background in that shot, and just trying to find stuff that we could use. And at one point we had, at one point Joe was like, you guys have to have some stuff laying around here. So we ended up digging up some old assets and throwing them in there. Killing things from other films.
Adding, bringing back characters. Yeah, nice. Okay. So, we're almost to the end, because we don't want to be too long, but what would Steve Brick do differently next time because of your experience on Oblivion? Do you have one little thing that, because what happened this time, you will do different next time? Or was it an all good experience? What did you learn from it? I don't know how to put it. Maybe it's in Joe's ways, well, or maybe it's Eric's ways, maybe it's what you, it can be technically, it can be relationship, I don't know, whatever.
You know, there's always just, every show you try something different in how you're moving data around and how you're working, you know, with your assets and everything. And I think the only thing that I think I don't know, it went pretty smooth. I think maybe the only thing I would really do different is maybe we could clean up a little bit of the way. We're trying a couple of new things on how we hand off data between animation and lighting, and I think that maybe that could use a little... Well, we're already working on our next show, but overall, I mean, it was, you know, Joe's a great director to work with, and he's really easy to work with, and it was kind of a very well planned out, and we kind of knew what we were getting into, and things didn't change dramatically anywhere along the way, and so it was all pretty smooth sailing.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Steve, then. Thank you for your time and insights about this adventure. We appreciate it.
Sure.
Very much. Good luck for your... Good luck on your next project. And bye, Steve. Bye. Talk to you next time. Bye, guys.
Next time.
So that was Pascal Chapuis for The Art of VFX talking to Steve Prigg, animation supervisor on Oblivion. See you next time, guys. Pascal out.